Hello, everyone. It is Jenica from Get Checkered. Get Checkered is part of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown and community supported. You're probably wondering, hey, why is it just Jenica? Well, Caitlin and Courtney will not be on today's episode. Caitlin is on the island, so I think with some spotty internet, and Courtney is working. But I wanted to make sure we could talk about Jeddah and for me to share my hot takes and thoughts on it. So I figured I would do the podcast by myself. I hope you all enjoy. Before we dive into what actually happened today on race day, I did want to talk about what happened earlier this week when the drivers actually arrived in Saudi Arabia. I'm sure all of you have seen those images, but for those who don't know, there was a giant explosion and attack on some infrastructure in Saudi Arabia, which then the drivers obviously, and rightfully so, were extremely nervous, and it sparked a four-hour meeting between the drivers themselves and the FIA Formula One, the officials in Saudi Arabia. So the Saudi Arabia officials said that everything would be okay and ensured that everyone would be safe. And what I think is really interesting is that not too long after they said that, the Yemeni rebels called a ceasefire for 3 days, which essentially covers all of the time that Formula One is actually in Saudi Arabia, which I thought was really interesting. But for those who don't know, and it's okay to not know, folks, I am fully, completely ignorant to what's been going on in Yemen, and which is kind of a bit of a rude awakening when you realize how long it's been. But the Yemeni crisis started in 2011. There was an uprising that forced the long-standing authoritarian president, and I'm going to butcher his name, so I apologize, but Ali Abdullah Saleh, maybe, to hand over power to his deputy, which is Abdurrabah Mansour Hadi. We're going to call him Hadi from now on. He passed over power to him, and the Houthis, which are, they're called the Yemeni rebels, they took advantage of some of the weaknesses that he had, and by 2014, the Houthis had seized control of the Sada province in the north of the country, and then captured the nation's capital, Sana'a, again forcing the then president, Hadi, to flee abroad in March 2015. So that's the high-level stuff that I was able to pull from an article from the BBC, but you're probably wondering, you know, what does that even have to do with Saudi Arabia? Because I had that exact question. But Saudi Arabia is involved. So the government of Saudi Arabia has a coalition that they're backing, that is backing, sorry, the country's official government, and they have spent the last 7 years, folks, 7 years, fighting it out with the Houthis, and the Saudi Arabians have been using airstrikes primarily, and then in turn the Houthis have been using drones and missile attacks to attack both Saudi Arabia and its ally, the United Arab Emirates. So that's just a little bit of a high level of what's happening. I would love to say that I could give you an opinion here, but I truly can't. Like, I don't know enough about what's going on. I think that my heart is with the Yemeni people who have been going through this now for 12 years. That's an extremely long time. For those who don't know, my parents are Sri Lankan, so they have been deeply impacted by a decades-long civil war. It's just not conducive to the safety of anyone. And knowing from what I read in these articles that at least hundreds of thousands of Yemeni people have been displaced, it makes me upset. And I just hope that this can come to a conclusion sooner rather than later. But if you are wondering what happened, that's what happened. It was the Houthis that were attacking some infrastructure in Saudi Arabia, and that's what we all saw. So I don't know what a good segue is from this topic into everything else I wanted to talk about today, but like I said, we use the platforms that we have to educate where we can. And I think it's important for all of our listeners, and I'm going to hold myself to account too, to just know what's going on in the world, and that, you know, there are a lot of people suffering and there's a lot of challenges happening, and it's on us to remain educated and to make sure we are fighting for the most vulnerable and the people that need it. So, like I said, I can't form the best opinion here because I don't know enough, but I am now committed to learning as much as I can so that I can just be a better human being. That's all that we're trying to do. I wanted to segue so poorly into talking about the Jeddah track and specifically why it's so dangerous. So for those who don't know, this is the fastest street track that they have. With average speeds in excess of 250 kilometers an hour, which is 160 miles per hour. The track is the second longest track on the Formula One calendar, only behind Spa, which is just a smidge longer. The reason why it's considered so dangerous is because there are blind barrier line corners that have resulted in tons of close calls, and it's really, really difficult for the drivers to create space during hot laps or stuff and things like that. So this is very particularly true during the season that it actually debuted, which was last year. And in the 2021 race, for those who don't remember, there were a ton of incidents. And I want to say that this track, they did widen, which I think helps a lot of the close calls that they unfortunately have at this track as much as they do. So in 2021, for those who don't remember, the race was kind of a disaster. There was one safety car period, two red flags, four virtual safety car periods as well. And for just to give you a quick rundown on lap 10 in 2021, I just want to be clear, Mick Schumacher lost control of his Haas and smashed into the barriers. Then there was this accident involving Sergio Perez, Charles Leclerc, the one we never talk about, and George Russell. Following that incident, Sergio said that the Jeddah circuit is unnecessarily dangerous and believes the sport should review the track suitability. Also in 2021, it feels like yesterday that we were talking about this actually, but two F2 drivers, Thierry Pourchaire and Enzo Fittipaldi, were hospitalized because of an accident that happened. So this track is freaking dangerous, and I'm grateful that they widened it a little bit, making it easier. And obviously we've headed into a new era where there's new regulations in place that allow the cars to follow more closely, that they want to encourage more overtaking, more racing, and all that kind of stuff. So to have the cars kind of fit that, the regulation shift, and then also the track itself be widened is a good thing. But this track in general is just super dangerous, and it proved to continue to be so, I suppose. So during qualifying, I would love to say that it was super interesting, but it really wasn't. In terms of danger, Nicholas Latifi binned it. He got into an accident, and following that in Q2, Mick Schumacher got into a huge shunt. The big shunt was terrifying. I don't know if anyone else got to see it, but it was just one of those gut punch moments where your stomach just falls as far as it can physically go on your body. Because as much as we saw Mick Schumacher clearly move around, like Valtteri pulled up and gave him a thumbs up, so that I think was more reaffirming for all of us viewers versus what we could see was going on with Mick. It took him a really long time to get out of the car, and he actually didn't. So when the safety car came out, the ambulance came out, and he was apparently conscious and chatting, but he didn't physically get out of the car. And the photo that I did see of him, he had a neck brace on, which like also made my stomach turn. They ended up airlifting him to a hospital just to do some precautionary scans and things like that. Obviously, a hit like that, you don't know what's going on internally. So with that, The announcement came that he was fine later on in the day, but that he wouldn't be racing. So Haas was like, you know what, we're going to do one car. And I think that's smart, just given the track in general. We know how dangerous it is. Max has had multiple accidents. Mick said multiple accidents. It just isn't worth it to potentially damage a car, hurt a driver when they have to do another race. So just very happy that Mick was fine and that just everyone was fine, because it was very, very scary for, I think, the drivers themselves, but for viewers too. So again, that danger that we speak of, just really, really prominent and very, very clear. But continuing to talk about what happened in qualifying, I watched it for, I think, the first time in forever. Like, I can't remember the last time I watched qualifying. It's incredibly difficult to be a Formula One fan, and I'm sure you all know this, to just, it's a lot of time that you're dedicating. So if you have any other things to do, it can be quite difficult. And I watched qualifying this time. The biggest shock, I think, for everyone was just Lewis Hamilton being out in Q3. It was clear that he did not have pace in his car. He also didn't look physically like comfortable in the car, which a year ago, if he had told me like, oh, how do you know someone's not comfortable? You can just tell when a driver's comfortable in a car, and Lewis wasn't. So he was out in Q3. It's totally shocking for, I think, like I said, all of us. Some other highlights and some lowlights. I would say it's just in general for the Mercedes engine, it's something is up. A lot of the vehicles that have Mercedes engines are not doing so hot right now, and we're knocked out in Q3, Q2, which is not great for those drivers, obviously. We want to see them get into better positioning. And another stunner, which is very, very positive, was we were all just watching Ferrari on their final laps and seeing them do so well that I, again, will claim to be ignorant. I didn't see this. I did not see Sergio Perez hammer down truly one of the best laps of his life. And for the first time in his entire career, he landed a pole position. So he has been in Formula One, I believe, for 11 years, starting at Sauber. And he has been in 215 races, 16 races. So his first pole position, I don't even think that anyone could be upset, to be honest with you. Like, obviously, you know, Charles wants to be on pole, Carlos Sainz was close, but everyone is a Sergio Perez fan, and you could see that at the very, very end when he was celebrating his pole position, because his old teammates came to cheer him on at the side of the track, and they were his mechanics from now Aston Martin, formerly Racing Point, who were there. He still has the same PR person and physical therapist that he had in his Sauber days, so they were there, and of course his new Red Bull family. And I was just so excited to see him do so well. I think it's exciting to have just a great driver, a senior driver, someone that's been in the sport for so long, to be in a great car that can support him, and also to do it in a way that, like, none of us saw. I believe he was, like, just a couple thousandths quicker than Charles, too. So, just so great. It was just so wonderful celebrating that. Loved it. Loved seeing him kick ass in qualifying. I couldn't have been happier. Before we get into the rest of the podcast, and I did want to give a shout out to our sponsors. So we have two that help make this podcast happen. One is ATB. With ATB Cares, giving is easy. Donate through ATB Cares and ATB will match 20% of every dollar donated to eligible Albertan charities, maximizing the impact of your donation. Visit atpcares.com to choose your cause and donate today. I also wanted to give a second shout out to Park Power, who helps this podcast happen. In Alberta, you get to choose who you buy your internet, electricity, and natural gas from. If you switch providers, nothing changes about the delivery of these utilities to your home or business. If you have an existing contract, you're going to want to find out the terms before leaving, of course. And if you don't, guess what? It's even easier to sign up for Park Power. You, as the consumer, have the choice of who you pay your bills to, And why not choose your friendly local utilities provider, Park Power? So you can learn more at parkpower.ca. All right, we're heading into race day, everybody. Okay, so the start was really great, also very nerve-wracking. I think given this race and just the history here, I was terrified. But Perez did really, really well, and I think a lot of us were nervous that Charles would get the jump on him right away. But he didn't. He did incredibly well, and while Charles and Perez got off, unfortunately, Max ended up getting Carlos pretty much right at the start. So leading out of turn one, we had Checo in front, followed by Charles, then Max, and then Carlos in P4. Something to note that I didn't catch on until way later was actually Yuki was out. So the engine issues that seem to be plaguing the AlphaTauri have continued, and we didn't see him in qualifying really, and then he did his just a lap and his engine died, so he lost his engine, so didn't even get to start. And even with Pierre, he was someone that we're just so used to being at the front of everything, like it's kind of like the best of the rest, and it was kind of clear that he's also struggling with the car to some extent. And the other person that had a bit of a difficult start was Guan Yu Zhou. So we were able to see sort of the on where his perspective was through everything. He ended up dropping quite a few places at the start, and he said it was the same issue as before. So I don't know what that means exactly, but whatever that issue is that he experienced prior happened again, obviously. Someone who did benefit at the start was Lewis. For those who don't know, Lewis was starting P15. Not great. With some adjustments after Daniel Ricciardo snagged a penalty. He got a 3 grid place penalty. So in qualifying, which then helped Lewis not really, frankly, move up that much more. It wasn't that great. He didn't move that great. It didn't help him that much, but P15, I guess, is some adjustment. But right at the start, Lewis moved up one as well. So I think in all, for all of us, just to see all the drivers make it to turn one, a blessing, because we know how bad this track is. We know how competitive these drivers can be. So for me, that was a win. I was very, very happy. One of the biggest highlights, I don't even know if we can call it a highlight, folks, because it scared the crap out of me, was just seeing Alpine, both drivers, just go at it. Esteban and Fernando Alonso were battling each other, and I was so scared. I think that, I don't know if because last season was just so tough, and every time anyone approached in Jeddah, like at all, if they were trying to pass each other, it just was instantly an accident. But this time around, I was totally terrified. Seemingly, the drivers weren't, though, obviously. they basically were swapping position fairly consistently. There was one point, though, don't have the lap number written down, where Alonso clearly had the line to get around and past Esteban. And then really, really late, Esteban ended up moving his car like a bit more center, which was, when you watch it, oh my gosh, if you all get a chance to watch it, it is so scary, because it seemed like, thank God, Fernando Alonso is as seasoned as he is and has just experienced everything that he's experienced, because he hit the brakes hard enough that he did not end up hitting Esteban Ocon. So I don't know. They brought Otmar onto the interviews just to see, like, oh, hey, like, what do you think about this? What's going on with your drivers? They all laughed about it. And he's like, oh, we're just going to let them race. But I'm sure that they were sweating bullets back at Alpine. And, like, you want your drivers racing each other a little bit, of course, because it makes them better. But at the same time, like, the extent that it was happening was just, it scared me. And I think for them, I would assume that it frightened them too, because we know that track is just kind of shit. It's kind of shit. And what surprised me even more is that they were like, oh, we're going to let them race, when, you know, what's more beneficial to them is their team racing other folks, holding position to make sure people don't overtake them. Like, there's so many other things that this team needs to be focusing on. But in this case, it was more like a, oh yeah, we'll let them race, it's fine. And that went on for several laps, and I was nervous, so nervous. But by lap 13, Esteban was finally told to just hold position because Valtteri was right on both of them. And what I think is interesting there is as soon as they told him to hold position, he lasted maybe like a couple minutes, a couple car lengths before Valtteri ended up overtaking him in a very, very like easy move. So I don't know what happened there. I just thought it was so weird. I don't know. It's just, it's not the vibe. You want your team, like I said, you want your drivers racing each other a little bit, but not fully, because you never know what could happen to the car. Also, this time I noticed that Lewis was just chilling at the back. You know, he was overtaking everyone. It seemed that him being on the hards was really beneficial for getting that car into the sweet spot. So both him, Kevin Magnussen, and I believe Nico Hülkenberg all started on hards, and yeah, he got the car in a sweet spot and was just overtaking everyone. So there is pace in the Mercedes. I think that's something to note, is as much as we'll talk about it, this race did not go well for Lewis Hamilton. There is pace in this car. So there's stuff there. There's problems. There's a shit ton of problems, but there are these little gems that we're seeing come out of the car. And I think it comes back to the drivers, honestly. Both him and Russell really showed up today. Russell did really, really well, held on to P5, I believe. Yeah, P5, just with the skin of his teeth, worked really, really hard at the start to get into position. So I think in general, there's more that needs to be done for Mercedes, but as much as today maybe wasn't the best, there was some improvement there. But because Jeddah is Jeddah, nothing ever goes right here, I swear. So I didn't know how to put this all together, but basically when it came to pitting, Ferrari kind of played chicken a little bit with Sergio Perez. So we know that Sergio's leading, and when you are the leader, you kind of get to dictate things to some degree. But I truly think that the person that gets to dictate things is the person in P2. So Ferrari was saying, you know, get ready to swap tires. And as they were saying that, Red Bull was getting ready to respond. So Red Bull was like, okay, sure. So they called Sergio in. But when they did that, Charles stayed out. And normally, I guess that's okay, whatever. What I thought was funny, though, is that the Ferrari, like, pit team were all set to go, too. So I'm guessing that he was probably told to do, like, whatever was opposite to Sergio. So if Sergio went in, like, you stay out. If Sergio doesn't go in, you come in. I don't know. But why I say I didn't know where to put this is because he went into the pits, and we're all thinking, okay, like, this is a play for whatever. It's fine. And as soon as that happens, Nicholas Latifi bins it again into the wall. We need to do a deep dive on Nicholas Latifi because this man makes me so upset. So he gets into an accident. And I personally will say this race, I really want to check out a win. Could you imagine his first time on pole position and a win? That would be so freaking amazing for him. Doesn't happen because of Nicholas. So Nicholas gets into an accident straight into the wall. And with that, like, everything kind of shifts again. So everyone starts pitting under the virtual safety car. And it's like the advantage that Perez had is just completely gone. In fact, he is royally fucked by Nicholas doing this, which I think is so interesting. When it comes to Nicholas Latifi, I think we need to start having the conversation, folks. What is Nicholas Latifi doing in the sport other than dictating a lot of the things? Maybe he is a plant. Maybe he is entertainment. I don't know what it is, but he's also dangerous, right? Like, this is another accident at another race, which is costly to the team too. And we know Williams is not in a position to really afford to have a driver that's constantly getting into accidents. Like, this is not okay, folks. This is not okay. So I don't know. I just think, like, it sucked for Perez that this happened. It was great for everyone else because they were able to swap tires. And in the end, Charles ended up coming out in the lead, followed by Max Verstappen. and then Carlos Sainz and Checo. So Checo, when I say he got fucked, he got royally fucked. It was not good. I was also curious about the returnees. So K-Mag is obviously back in action after spending some time rallying. And Nico Hülkenberg is the reserve driver, but is also someone that's been out of a Formula One car for a while. And I think what's interesting is that K-Mag has complained about neck pains, obviously, because we know these drivers like essentially train their necks, and he hasn't been able to do that for as many months as he has. So that's a problem. And then also Hülkenberg mentioned just being tired. I think the Sky One Sports reporters were talking about. And again, that's another thing where, you know, it's not that you're not in top condition. These are athletes, are always going to be in some condition, but I think it is a different thing if you're racing multiple weekends in a row. Like there's something different about that. I did want to give a shout out though to Nico Hülkenberg, because at some point on the hards, he was in the points, he was doing extremely well. And I think for him, it's always been just luck, isn't it? That's something about Formula One, is like always based around luck. But he just hasn't been in the best car. So to see him in the points quite comfortably was great. But then we start to notice some issues. So for Nico's side, I don't know if it's just the car wasn't fast enough or the tires started to give out. When everyone pitted, K-Mag, Nico, and Lewis didn't, because they were on the hards. And I don't know if Nico Hülkenberg just started losing momentum with his car, or the tires started going, so he ended up just falling down the ranks, and it was like really, really painful to watch. And as I was like gutted about that, I think the biggest question was like, okay, when is K-Mag, when are people going to pit? You know, like, when is this going to happen? Because everyone's been vying for track position at this point. It is like Mercedes is in a 5-6 position, which we know is the best they say they can do right now is 5-6, but they need to pit and they haven't pitted yet. And then kind of lap 36 to 37 comes another virtual safety car. And this one was devastating too, because we see Alonso just no power, just barely. It just looks like he's driving in slow motion, almost like he's going so slowly down the track, which sucks because he had such a great race up until then, just like so powerful, doing so well. And we see him just barely make it around the track, but doing it, which is great, because I'm like, okay, there's no accident. And then his car dies right in the pit entry. You actually can see in the video the engine kill like pop up on the screen, which I thought was so funny. So that ends up dying. But as this is also happening, Daniel Ricciardo, his engine dies too, right at that pit entrance, which is like, okay, like what's happening here? And simultaneously, Valtteri, who had a pretty decent race, like he was running in the points the whole time, ends up pitting, and we're thinking, okay, like not sure why he's going on another set of tires, whatever, but they fully end up retiring his car. And it's like, okay, so in the span of what felt like 30 seconds, we lost three drivers. All right, I guess that's fine, I don't know. So I think what's interesting is with where these cars died in the pit entry, provided opportunities for others, but like not so much for Lewis Hamilton. So Nico Hülkenberg and Kevin Magnussen were able to sneak in before the pit entry lanes were closed by Formula One, obviously for safety, because now you have two cars in the pit lane, it's dangerous. And I think when Nico and K-Mag went in, I don't think that Fernando Alonso was there yet, I think. And one of the cars, yeah, it was just like fine for them to do so. So they ended up doing that and it was fine. But by the time that Lewis ends up rolling around, the pit entry is closed. So he actually can't go in to swap his tires, which we knew at that point for all the Lewis stands that it was like this man was put in between a rock and a hard place. Like, and this is the hardest place he could be in, which is he was going to lose track position without a doubt. And even with quite a few people dropping out of the race, it doesn't matter. He's losing track position. So He does end up coming in to pit, comes out in like 14th or something ridiculous, right? That, like, or maybe 14th. Is able to drive his ass off and get into the points. So he was P10, which is great. All right, so while this is happening, you know, there's this whole mess of just stuff going down. There was actually an accident at turn one between Alex and Lance, so the Williams and the Aston Martin, which is not great. From what I could see, it looked like Alex made the mistake while trying to overtake, and by doing that, he was pinned as the person with the most blame, which is fine. It happens. But with that, he actually gets a 3-place grid penalty for the Australian Grand Prix. So I don't know. Just not great. Just not a great day. Alex ended up DNFing as well and was out of the race. And same with Lance Stroll. So not great. But the bigger story is on the final laps with Max and Charles. They battled it out from lap, I would say, like 47 on, just constantly going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. This was a 50-lap race, so to see that sort of wheel-to-wheel racing was really exciting. I think what was challenging, though, and this is challenging for me as someone who watched last season, is that this is what racing should be, right? Like, this is wheel-to-wheel. No one is putting the other person in so much danger that they're going to get hurt. And as someone who watched last season and is new to the sport, it was difficult to see Max sort of be really respectful towards Charles versus what we saw between him and Lewis. And I know people are going to make the comparisons of like, well, the regulations are different, blah, 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 all this crap. I get it. But even the messaging that was coming out after the W that Charles, that Max ended up taking home, it was just, it's really weird and feels weird. I don't know. I know things have changed, but it just made me feel really, really uncomfortable. Going back to the little battle, though, there was this one moment where they were both going into a turn. I forget which one, so apologies. And both of them lock up. But Max locks up even more. Charles locked up, but kind of did the whole, fuck it, I'm going to gun it, and gunned it around Max. And it looked like something out of a movie. Like, it looked like they were going again in slow motion. It was so interesting and so weird visually to see. In the end, though, Max snagged back that P1, finished the race in top position, followed by Charles, and then by like half a second, if not less. And then Carlos Sainz and Checo rounding up our top 10. We had George in P5 by, and then Lando, which it's great to see some Mercedes engines doing a little bit better. Gasly, K-Mag, and then Lewis Hamilton in 10th. Yeah, that was the race. I think what was really interesting is just how this all shook out. I would say if we could talk about like winners and losers of this race, I would say the winners were, of course, Max, Charles, Signs, whatever, but I also would say it's like the Ferrari team in general. It is so clear they have a really, really great car, and they are the ones to beat out there. The big loser, I would say, is Checo. Just such bad luck. He just did not. He performed so well all weekend, so for that to happen, I don't know. I found it like pretty devastating for him. And the other loser, I would say, is Lewis Hamilton, folks. He just did not have luck on his side today. And what I think was like kind of comical is when Bono told him he was P10, he was like, okay, like, do we even get points for this? Oh, devastating. Obviously, they do get points, which is good. But he's just obviously not happy with the car. And all weekend, he made it pretty clear that he wanted to just go home. So I think, it's we're off to an interesting start. And I'm excited to see where the rest of the season goes. I'm also extremely nervous because right now Max and Charles are very cordial. When Charles crossed the finish line, he congratulated Max as well and saying that was really great. But you can only last like that for so long. There's one single move could easily rotten the relationship and turn it all into very huge drama and stuff like that. So we'll end up seeing what happens, but I'm just excited for this season. Really nervous for Mercedes. K-Meg did really well. So yeah, we'll have to see what ends up happening. I wanted to quickly touch on some of the interviews. There wasn't too much that was said that we don't already know, which I thought was kind of annoying, to be honest with you. Obviously, Max, Charles, Carlos, everyone was like happy and fine. Carlos always talking business, always concerned about his car and where the positioning is and all that kind of stuff. And from everyone else, I think the most interesting thing was coming from Andrew Newey, who is with Red Bull. And Christian a little bit mentioned this too, but it's just that they want to develop the car further, but the cost cap really limits certain things, which is good and bad, obviously. And it's good because that means all the other teams have, we can be competitive, right? And that's what we're seeing this year, is that so many other teams are competitive. But I also think it can be a challenge. And I think Mercedes actually has to figure this out too, because that cost cap is there for a reason and it's to help everyone. But if Mercedes has a lot they need to change, oh boy, I just don't know how they're going to manage this at all. What I also thought was funny is that Christian kind of dodged a question about Mercedes, and it was a very generic question, just like, are you happy competing with someone else for a change? / like, when Mercedes is up there, what's it going to be like? And he just avoided it completely. It was kind of bizarre. But there was a cheeky little interview with Kevin Magnussen, Lando, and Esteban Ocon. So K-Mag, it just genuinely seems to be happy to be back in the sport. And I think it's really refreshing to just see his smiling face. You know, obviously, you know, his last few years in Formula One was just not the best, right? Like, his last year was just not great. So for him to be racking up points, getting teased about his neck that is in a lot of pain because he's struggling with the G-force of the car. It's really, really fun to see. And then Lando bopped into that interview also to tease K-Mag about his neck. He also joked about the pink cars being a bit faster than they were expecting. Esteban said that the whole thing was mega, which I think is always like so funny because I don't really like the word mega. And you know, Lando did try to race Esteban right to that line, and it just didn't happen this time around. So they did touch in with Sergio Perez, who just said it's racing, which I think it's so true, because there's nothing that he did wrong that hurt his race, right? At the end of the day, it was just a safety car. Like, that's what ended up ruining things and for him, and it happens, and that's okay, but it still freaking sucks, but it happens. They did talk to George and Lewis a little bit, but there wasn't that much said there. So we're all, I think, looking forward to Australia. I think Danny Rick is looking forward to Australia, and we'll have to just see what ends up happening. There are some question marks I did want to mention as I record this, around like where folks are actually going to be, because when the double yellows came out, it looks like that maybe Charles sped through it and Carlos and Perez did too. And as we know, they take those very, very seriously if you're not slowing down or following proper regulation for any sort of double yellow flags, red flags, anything like that. So I don't know what's going to happen there. I haven't seen anything pop up anywhere quite yet, but typically it is a 5-second penalty or time that's added to your time. So we'll have to see what ends up happening. But all right, folks. And I think that's it. It's a bit of a quick and sweet one, this episode. We normally chat for like an hour and a half sometimes. And I think this one will just be just shy of like 40 minutes. Wild. But I think that's what happens when you don't have any co-hosts to chat with. I don't know. Please follow us on Instagram at GetCheckered, Twitter at GetCheckered. Where else are we on? We are on TikTok at GetCheckered. That seems to be our most popular of platforms. And the reason why to follow us there is that we really want to ramp this podcast up. And this is a personal goal, also a professional goal, is we'd love to do more of this, but we'd also love to have more co-hosts and people join us on the podcast. And we also want to pay them for their freaking time. So if there is any way for you all to support support us in that journey, please do. And that can come with follows. It comes from you recommending our podcast to your friends and family. It comes from rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts as well as Spotify. So anything like that, just please do it. We want to do this forever. We want to get some really great interviews. And that happens with really great stats. So please do. We will be back, I think, next week. I don't know. This is typically where the girls would tell me that I was wrong. So I think it's next week. Okay, so I just checked. Yeah, we will be back next week, but we won't be talking about a Formula One race. Instead, we will be probably doing a deep dive on one of the drivers' careers. Maybe it's time to do a deep dive on Nicholas Latifi, because my God, this man, he's turning into the problematic child. But I'm not sure what we'll talk about. We'll talk about something. Following that, though, is the Australian Grand Prix, which is April 9th for all the folks that are listening. And yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you enjoyed it, even though it was just me. And I will chat with you, with some of the girls, next week. Stay checkered and make sure to follow us on everything. Bye, everyone. All right, folks, I actually do have an update, and it's so funny to throw this in sort of post recording the episode. But Pierre did speak to a lot of the media about the fact that he was in some of the most intensive pain that he's ever felt while driving a Formula One car. He said it was specifically in his intestines, and that when he pulled the car in, he actually physically couldn't get out on his own. Like, the mechanics had to help him out of the car. So not sure what's going on there. He went and saw the doctor and then had gone to do some media. That's obviously why we're hearing about it. So seems to be fine enough to do media, maybe not. And we'll be going back to the doctor. So hopefully everything's good there. Obviously wishing him a speedy recovery as well.